swinging a high drive into center field. Hits at the wall. It is gone. Cassis does it again.
Again.
It's gone. It's into the bullpen. This game is tied. This game is tied.
He swings and rips one to center field. It's high. It's deep. It's back. It's gone. Sale winds. He fires. Swing and a miss. Strike three. It's over.
The Red Sox have won the World Championship.
Welcome back to Play Tessie. It is episode 113. If you're listening on drop day, it is August 13th. This is the official Red Sox podcast of WEI. Before we get going, hit that subscribe button wherever you're listening. Subscribe, five stars, all your podcast platforms. Do it on multiple. We really appreciate it when you guys do that. You can also check us out on YouTube or on the WEI page. We've got a Play Tessie playlist. So hit the thumbs up on those videos, subscribe to WEI, and then go back. Subscribe on the podcast platforms again. Also on the socials at Play Tessie on Twitter and Instagram. I am here with Sammy and I'm here with Joe, who is in for Pat. And the big news, at least following Sunday, because Sunday's game was terrible. But the big news following that game was that the Red Sox were going to be promoting Marcelo Meyer to AAA. But also they're promoting Kyle Teal to AAA. And then third, they're promoting Roman Anthony to AAA. All three of the big three prospects getting promoted to AAA at the same time. August 11th on the day of promotion, and they will be up there for the rest of the season, unless, of course, one of them gets the call to the majors, which we can get into if we think that's possible. But Sammy, Joe, you know, at the tail end of a absolutely brutal game, some news that we've been waiting for honestly quite some time.
It was kind of like a reminder, a big picture reminder. Like, yeah, this season is kind of trending in the wrong direction after a really fun few months. Not over yet, but remember what the big picture is. The help that this team actually needs is coming, and it's coming fast. They're in AAA now. So, yeah, I was. Obviously, we're all a little peeved after watching that awful game, but this was a nice kind of, hey, it's not all that bad. Just wait. These guys will be dominating the league in short order, we hope.
Yeah, I'm happy to. I think I'm more struck with the fact that they all got brought up at once, which I'm sure we'll get into very long discussion about that. But it's nice to know, like, there's a little bit of security, because I think we started talking about this a month ago. You know, we've peppered Brian Abraham on the radio. We're kind of, you know, we're taking trips to Worcester and we're kind of just looking around being like, okay, is this going to happen? Is this going to happen? But the timeline is here. You know, we thought maybe they were ahead of schedule, and, you know, right after Anthony won the skills showcase, he would have been prime for maybe like a week or so afterwards to get promoted. But like Sammy said, there's some good things coming, some big picture things happening, and you got to be happy about it.
Yeah, it's so funny, Joel, because Rob always finds a way to get Brian Abraham to call into Baseball Isn't Boring, and we've been asking him about mainly it was always phrased in the context of, when's Marcelo going to get promoted? Because I don't know. I don't know why we did, because like Marcelo and Teal, I feel like, were the two that a lot of people thought were going to get promoted first. But
he's been in the system the longest and he has the least to work on. Like, he plays good defense. He hits the ball well. He runs well. But Teal has his defense isn't ready. That was the book on him, was that, yeah, everything looks good. He just has to fine tune the defense a bit. So that's why I thought it was going to be Meyer. And then Roman Anthony, he's just much younger. Not nothing against him, but I thought it was going to be in that order: Meyer, Teal, Anthony.
Yeah, and we were talking about this before the show, but I'm going to toot my own horn a little bit and say, because I asked Brian Abraham if, on one of those times right before the All-Star break, if there would be any consideration to promoting them all together, to keep them all together. And like, anytime we'd ask him about promoting Meyer, promoting Teal, promoting Anthony, whatever, he'd give us like a, yeah, like, there's benefits to doing this. They like are doing good. They're basically a non-answer, but like, he's answering the question, but not really. But I do think there's value in promoting them all together, because God, I mean, remember back to the majority of the 2022 season, the Sox were not playing very well, and the one saving grace that we had really coming, well, I guess we had a couple because Bayo and Casas were coming, but like a little bit lower, it was just Meyer. And like he was this elite dude who was on the top 10 of the pipeline pages and prospect lists. And it's like, this is the guy. And that's the one saving grace. But fast forward to today, he's in a group of three with these guys and they're going through it together. And I think that that's much easier to sort of load onto your back if you got two guys to take it with you. They're going to go up there and there's only so much media coverage that three guys can split. Like if it was just Meyer, he's getting everything at once. If it's just Teal, he's getting everything at once. But now it's all three of them. I think it's good that they're doing it all together. I think there's legitimate value in doing that, even though it's not.
Gordo, that's, yeah, Gordo, that's an awesome point. I didn't even think of that. The fact that it's not a singular guy shouldering all this media coverage, and you know there's going to be a boatload of it, especially in this market. So to have them kind of divvy that up, that's good for them too. Less distractions, less pressure. Granted, the pressure is going to be, it's going to be big pressure no matter what, but less cameras in your face, or at least you're next to your buddy while you're doing it. So that's a good point. And then I also like, from a marketing standpoint, how they're really leaning into this big three thing. Like when they get to the majors, it's not going to be like this anymore. It's going to be Rafael Devers, Sadon Rafaela, and the big three plus the support cast, Duran, you know, Abreu, you could go on, but
Casas.
I think it's, yeah, Casas.
There's so much. They have so many bats.
Wong might be gone. Grissom. Yeah. Anyway, point being, this is a cool marketing spin too. I thought it was really kind of symbolic of the new, not new generation, but the next wave of great Red Sox teams. It keeps inching closer and closer. And now we can start the conversations about what the roster is going to look like in 2025 to start the season and include those guys. Because prior to being called up to AAA, it's hard for me to say, I want Kyle Teal as the starting catcher in 2025. But now you can kind of start dreaming about that. Maybe he'll be a platoon with Wong or Jansen. There's a million different options, but this is basically, to put a bow on this, this is the start of the future. Like you're starting to see it now. Now they're no longer in Portland. They're in the same state as the Red Sox now. You've upgraded. We love Maine, but come on. Massachusetts has Boston. This is the hub. So now they're getting closer. It's so exciting. We've never really had this as Red Sox fans, a wave of prospects like this. We've had a here and there, but a wave like this, this is sick.
Yeah. It's like they've had them.
As long as they bring the flannels.
Yeah, they gotta bring the flannels.
Based off Marcelo, I don't think they even brought the flannels to Port. What we need to find something that Worcester has. I know I've said this before. We need to find something that Worcester has and do that. But you're right, Sammy. It's like they go from in the same country in the Carolinas to, oh, now they're in the same region. They're in Portland. You can go see them if you want. Now they're in the same state. You go to Worcester if you want, and then they'll come together. But Gordo, you're also right.
I told you the Worcester thing. I told you this a few episodes ago. Remember?
What was it? What was it like?
Drinking whiskey. Yeah, drinking whiskey out of a Dixie cup. That's how I think of Worcester. Like you go to a bar, you ask for a whiskey, and they're like, what do you have? And you're like, give me the well. And they give you the worst whiskey they have in a plastic cup. Worcester. How does that not fire you up?
Shots of whiskey after every homer. I agree with you, Sammy.
And a cigarette. Give them a cigarette.
I have a question for you guys, because I think a lot of people, you look back at, you know, Andrew Benintendi skipped AAA. Rafael Devers had what I think just like a couple of weeks in AAA, if that.
I'll check on Devers real quick.
Yeah, check on Devers. But the question I have, and I have a convicted answer to this, but I want to get your guys' takes on it first. Is there any chance in your guys' eyes that we see these guys in the majors this season? And I'll preface that by saying the most recent evidence of this that we have is Sadon Rafaela, who was promoted from AA to AAA last year on June 25th and got called up to the bigs on August 28th. So he had 2 months in AAA before getting the call. There's less than 2 months left in the season right now in AAA.
I'm going to say no. I think they're still in the thick of the playoff chase. You know, that could change within a month, but even then 1 month or 3 weeks or whatever might not be enough. Even if you want to give them like a cup of coffee, it's clear that the Sox are slow playing this as best as they can. I think we all agree that They could have been in AAA a long time ago, but they decided to wait for this moment, give them a couple of months to end this year and then start them off at the beginning of the year. I think it's more likely you see him around this time 1 year from now, obviously depending on how things go. But I think they know how they put all their eggs into the basket of the big three, and they do not want to waste this opportunity. So kind of similar to what they're doing with like Tristan Casas and their return, they want to wait until the exact perfect moment when they know for a fact that they are ready to take that jump into the major. So I say no on 2024.
Yeah, I lean no. I don't know if their performance is even going to matter. I think if they perform poorly, then it means there's no chance to get called up. But I think if they're average or really good, there's a small chance. But if I had to guess, I'd say probably not this year. But I will disagree with Joe on one thing. I think they're going to be starting the season in Major League Baseball next year or coming up.
I think it's very early. I think it's by the end of April, you'll see all three of them up here.
Yeah, it depends if they want to do the service time manipulation thing, which honestly, people look down upon it. I think that's fine. I think that's smart. You wait a month? You wait a month to get an extra year of a guy's contract? I think it might even be less.
I think it might be like 20-something days. It's crazy.
Yeah, see, that's if they did that, I wouldn't be upset. That's an extra year. But anyway, yeah, I don't think you'll see them this year, but I do think early 2025, if not from the jump, that's when you're going to see all three of them.
I think there's really only there's two scenarios when you could see these guys. I think there is if they're in competition for a playoff spot, if they're still in this race at the very end of the season, there's no chance you see Roman Anthony. I think there's also, if they're in contention, almost no chance that you see Marcelo Meyer, especially with the news that Trevor Story is likely to play again this year. I think if they're in contention, the only world where you see Kyle Teal is if one of the catchers goes down. Because if that happens and they're in competition for a playoff spot, like, yeah, you don't want to be wasting any games with a backup catcher that's not a big league caliber guy. I think at that point, if you need to win every game, you got to go with Teal. If they're not in contention, then I guess maybe you could give one of them a look if they're absolutely crushing AAA. Because you don't need to keep them together at this point. Like once they get to the bigs, like that doesn't need to be. It would be insanely hard to call all three of them up to the majors at the same time. You never see that. So I think this is just a double A to AAA thing. But I genuinely don't think that you're going to see any of them though. I think it would take like a couple of very specific circumstances, like either them being in competition and a catcher getting hurt and Teal playing well, or one of them playing absolutely crazy well and the Red Sox not being in contention. I think it's a lot that would have to happen.
I wonder if they value at all Kyle Teal getting some reps with the Red Sox pitching staff. I don't know if that's enough value for them to call him up this year. You'd have to talk to like Bailey or Willard or someone, Breslow maybe, someone who really, really knows the ins and outs of what it's like to be a major league pitcher. So that might be something they're into. But yeah, it's just hard to envision them coming up this year, which I think is like, it says absolutely nothing about the players if they don't come up this year, to be clear.
All right.
By the way, Gordo, I got Devers.
Oh, how many? Yeah.
2017. How many games do you think he played? Take a guess.
11.
Close. Joe?
If he's close to 11, 15?
Is it less?
No, he played 9 games.
Ooh, that's 9
games in AAA. In fact, he played more games in AAA. Actually, no, not true. And then he played another 6 in AAA. I think he got hurt in 2018. Had to get rehab rehab. So, yeah, AAA, not Raffy's thing.
Yeah, that was crazy. Back then, like in the under the Dombrowski regime, they just like straight up Benny skipped it. Devers basically skipped it. Crazy.
Devers is the first prospect I remember seeing the videos of on Twitter. People being like, yo, look at this kid. And like seeing these grainy videos pop up. That was the first guy where I got kind of that experience. Cause we had like not a great example, but like Henry Owens was a huge prospect. And you'd have to like YouTube Henry Owens pitching. And then you see it. But you didn't get those highlight clips like we get now. So the Devers one, oh man, just remember seeing that swing and being like, whoa, he's violent with that stuff.
I remember him being in single A, and I think it was like Stats would tweet out numbers of him and Manny Margot. Like those, it was Devers and Margot that like got grouped together. And it's funny looking back at that now, because like Margot is like, it's just like Manuel Margot, and Devers is like, Devers is just like, oh my God. But I have three questions, one for each of the prospects here for you guys.
Ooh.
Who do you want to start with? There. Yeah. Who do you want to start with?
I was actually going to say,
let's save the Anthony one for last, because that one might be the longest.
Let's save the Anthony one for last. I feel like that one might be the longest.
All right. Let's go. Goddamn. Teal. We'll go with Teal.
Okay.
Next year, if Kyle Teal is either your starting catcher or your platoon catcher, do you keep Wong and have Wong platoon with him? Or do you trade Wong and re-sign Jansen, who may be better suited for a backup role, whereas Wong may deserve, at this point, full-time reps somewhere?
I think trading Wong is the answer. I think you kind of said it right there. He's too good to be a backup. He could fetch you a pretty penny on the trade market. Young catcher, good speed, little bit of pop, improving his contact skills, good at controlling the run game. The blocking, not great. The framing, not great. I think that'll matter less as the robot arms come. But I would move Wong. That might be a piece in the big blockbuster trade, because there has to be a huge trade. There's too many guys to fit on the roster. They have a glaring need in the rotation, which we've talked about in pretty much every single episode we've ever had. They still haven't addressed it, really. Anyway, maybe that's the big starting pitcher trade. Not just Wong, but it would be Wong and, you know, whoever, Abreu.
Yeah, Durant, I agree. Like I agree. If you platoon Wong and Teal, like we talked about, the big thing that they were working on with Kyle Teal was defense. And you've got sort of, I guess you'd say, a sub-average, below-average defender at catcher for both of your spots in Wong and Teal. That, I think, is a little too dangerous. Danny Jansen has shown that he's a really good defender. So I would like him to sort of be in that spot with Teal. And I agree. Like, Wong right now might be the biggest trade chip that you have. Like, York at the deadline was the biggest chip. Wong right now, it's kind of like Justin Turner, where he's kind of getting squeezed out. His role is getting squeezed out, because you could say, oh, platoon him at first, but you have Tristan Casas. You do the same for second, but you've got a slew of guys there. So I think Wong getting traded, like Sammy said, is probably the way to go.
I'm actually really surprised that you guys answered that, because I thought I was going to be delivering a really, really hot take when I said I think they should trade Wong this offseason.
He's too good.
He's too good
to be a backup.
To be honest with you, I think that's how he's going to be perceived in the market, and I think they can fetch that kind of value. But do you really think that Connor Wong is going to hit 300 again? I don't. And he's proven that he's like he can throw the ball, maybe not as good as he was throwing it last year, but he's not a good framer. He's not a good blocker. He's at the bottom of the league in both of those. And if he's going to be in the bottom of the league in both of those, and he's not going to like, and I don't want to say, and he's not going to hit, because that's assuming he's not going to hit. And that, I guess that's not really a fair assumption, but it would not surprise me at all if this was the best offensive version of Connor Wong we ever see. So it might be the perfect time to sell on him, especially when you've got a starting catcher coming up and a guy in Danny Jansen, who clearly likes to hit at Fenway, is at least a better blocker than Wong is. I don't know if we're far enough into this to evaluate how he works with the pitchers, because he's literally been there for 2 weeks. But yeah,
offseason. Gordy, you could also just flip your argument and say, look at the improvements Wong made from 2023 to 2024. What's to say he's not going to keep improving? This kid's talented. He also, young catcher, super athletic, plays second base as well. He played some first base. I think he came up playing some third base as well. So this is a guy who's going to have a lot of value. And to be 100% clear, this is not saying Danny Jansen is better than Connor Wong. It's saying Connor Wong is too good, too young to be a backup catcher right now. So it would kind of be a disservice to him to call up Teal, make him the guy, and be like, Connor, take a seat. You had a great season. Take a seat.
I agree with you. I think it's a perfect mix of selling high, because I'm not super confident that Wong is going to hit like this in the future, and also him being too good to be a backup. When you've got a guy in Danny Jansen who his overall numbers, like regardless of how well he plays for the Red Sox down the stretch, his overall numbers this year are not going to look pretty at the very end. And I don't think he's going to get some big deal in free agency. You know, maybe coming back to the Red Sox on a one-year deal to rebuild your value, split time with a rookie who they're going to want to, you know, pick and choose the matchups. Like, they're not going to want Kyle Teal, I don't think, facing lefty-lefty matchups when he first comes up. So Danny Jansen can get every righty and maybe even some other games at Fenway. Like, that's an opportunity that he may not be able to get elsewhere, especially as a catcher.
Every lefty, probably. But yeah. Yes, I hear what you're saying. And it's a good point about him having a down year. Maybe you could bring him back on the cheap. And I do think that this guy has a perfect swing for Fenway. That take is so overused with any right-hander. But with Danny Jansen, pretty much every ball he hits in the air is to left field. So for him, I think it does apply. He's got one of the more glaring Fenway swing charts. So yeah, I like the fit there. So to answer your question, I think Wong's the guy who goes.
I'm shocked that you guys... I was setting that question up for you guys to say, no, Wong's been so good, works well with the pitching staff, like keep him around till Teal proves, and then maybe you can.
Well, like you said, with the batting average, he's kind of streaky. He gets into these waves.
I got a comp. This is like when Bobby Dalbec had a really good 2021, and you had far better first baseman in AAA in Tristan Casas. I hope the Red Sox don't do what they did to Dalbec with this Wong situation, because they missed their opportunity. That was the most obvious sell high in the history of sell highs. They didn't do it.
True.
Hung on to Dalbec. He came crashing down to earth. He's still crashing down to earth. I don't think he's reached the core yet. Maybe it's in Worcester. But yeah, that's I kind of see it in a similar light, if that makes sense.
I think maybe the reason that I think that Wong may not do this again, I might be scarred a little bit from the Christian Vasquez experience. Let me list you his homers by season. This shit's crazy. All right. In 2016, one homer. 2017, five homers. 2018, three homers. 2019, 23 homers. 2020, seven homers. 2021, six homers. 2022, nine homers. 2023, six homers. 2024, six homers. So it's like, you've got a catcher, has a big offensive season, a catcher you weren't necessarily expecting to hit much. The difference here is they've got a big-time catching prospect coming behind them. So we'll see what they do. Not exactly the same player as Vasquez, but that might just be why that thought came into my head. Second question, we'll go to Meyer here. Assuming Marcelo Meyer and Trevor Story is your starting middle infield next year, and we'll have the Vaughn Grissom discussion another time, I think that one needs so much more context. How does he play the rest of the way? Is he going to be okay to play outfield? Like, is he going to be whatever? The question I have for you guys here, who plays short, who plays second?
Meyer is your shortstop. I don't even think this should be a conversation. You cannot prioritize Trevor Story after how bad his tenure in Boston, stats-wise, has been. You cannot make Meyer secondary. Like, Story has not been able to stay on the field for years now. He's going to have to accept playing second base or maybe even third base somewhere else. He's not going to be the shortstop. That is Meyer's job. That's the future of the team. Give him the role. Don't fuck around and put him at second. He's the shortstop. I hope this isn't even a discussion internally with the Red Sox.
Yeah, same. I hate to agree with Sammy so much, but yeah, Meyer is the guy you've pinpointed to be your future shortstop. And then second base, you can kind of play around with. I think the beauty for the Sox is they have a number of options. They have Story, who's a right-handed bat. They have Vaughn Grissom, who they're expecting to be the future. And then you have all these other pieces, David Hamilton and Manuel Valdez. You know, you name it. They have a bunch of middle infield depth that they can either plug and play at second base or, like Connor Wong, use them as a trade chip. So I think, like Sammy said, Meyer is your shortstop because you have said from the minute you drafted him that he is going to be the guy. So why would you knock him off the path from that?
I think the argument, and I'm just going to say the argument because I don't actually agree with it. I figured we were all going to agree on this one, even though it's boring that we're all going to agree, because I agree that Meyer needs to be the shortstop. But the argument would be that Trevor Story has been, at least up until the last time we saw him, he's been an absolutely elite defensive shortstop. Certainly better today and will be a better defensive shortstop at the beginning of 2025 than Marcelo Meyer could be. So by putting Meyer there, you're willingly taking a present day hit defensively. That said, that guy, as you guys have said, is your shortstop of the future. You've got to teach him the ropes at that spot now. You've got a shortstop in-house, Trevor Story, who's known that this is coming for years. He knows that he's going to be the guy tasked with teaching Marcelo Meyer the ropes when he comes up. And not for nothing, nothing pissed me off more than when they moved Xander off of short to third to re-sign Steven Drew in 2014. Do not make that mistake again. Get this guy is your shortstop of the future. Start him there now. He has not played much second base in the minors. He is your shortstop. He has the potential to be an above average defensive big league shortstop. Let him work to get there. Don't pause the development. Just keep going.
I think with Story, just real quick, is I think his defense overall has been pretty good since he bossed. I don't have the defensive numbers in front of me when he was at second base in 2022 with Xander, but overall, I would say, yeah, yeah, he's a good defender overall. So I think you wouldn't go wrong. I'm pretty sure that you wouldn't go wrong if you move Story over to second base.
No, you'd have a good defense regardless. It's just like you in the present day of 2025, your defense would be better with Trevor Story at short. But it's like, marginal?
Meyer a new spot too. You have to consider that. Hey, welcome to the majors.
That's true. It's an assumption.
Also, by the way, learn a new position while you're trying to adjust to major league hitting and major league life. That's tough.
I think the Red Sox have also told us the answer to this question, because when Meyer has not played shortstop in the minors, it's been more third base. It hasn't been as much second. So I think if you're going to see Meyer playing elsewhere at times, it might be to get Devers some DH duty, get him off his feet, because they don't like taking Devers out of the lineup, at least with the current state of the team. They don't like getting him out of the lineup. But DH days can be kind of half an off day, but obviously, like, we'll see the way the roster looks like. Obviously, if Masataki Yoshida's on the roster, that gets harder. So we'll see what they do. But I figured we'd all be in agreement there. I think Meyer, when he's up in the majors, should be playing shortstop, because that's going to be the best iteration of your team for years to come. Now, the hardest question.
Hit me. I'm ready for this.
It's actually a two-parter. Roman Anthony's the youngest, and I think in all likelihood will be the last one called up whenever that happens. Do you trade an out? So right now the Red Sox outfield, there is no everyday outfield, but if you had to say what the everyday outfield is supposed to be, it would be Duran in left, Sinan in center, Willier in right.
Yes.
Do you trade an outfielder this offseason going into the season, A? And B, even if you don't, because at some point you're going to need to trade one, who's it going to be? But let's start with question A. Do you trade an outfielder this summer or this winter going into the season?
Oh, man, that's so tough. You have to. You also have Yoshida, and you might be bringing back O'Neill as well, because your outfield is very left-handed heavy. It's also Ref Snyder, who's a righty. It's too many guys. Yeah, I think they have to move an outfielder. They really don't have a choice when you look at the roster.
I'm not talking about Yoshida. He doesn't count. So you're saying one of those three guys that I named.
Even without him, I think you have to. You're not playing any of those guys over Roman Anthony. And I think I'm going to get a lot of shit for the guy I think they probably should move. But
that's the next question. Hold off on that
thought. I'll hold it.
Joe, should they trade one of those three guys? Because honestly, I think no matter what happens, I don't think Yoshida is going to be on this team next year. So that's not even part of this question. Please. The three starting outfielders, should they trade one this offseason in preparation to call up Roman Anthony? Or should they trading Anthony is an option there too, Joe?
I think that the tricky thing is you're saying is should they trade him this offseason?
Yes.
And it would make sense. I think either way you look at it, It makes sense whether you hold on to all three or you give up one of them. I would say hold on to them. I think you have to hold on to all three, because if you want to sort of be in this line of still contending but also getting these young guys ready, like, I'm not going to say that Roman Anthony is automatically going to be the starting right fielder. I think he needs to get a little bit of experience. You know, look at what happened to Vaughn Grissom this year. When you give him the keys – maybe they didn't give him the keys like right away, but they kind of lined things up to say, you're going to be the starting second baseman. And, you know, he got injured. Not saying that's because of the pressure that he had, but I don't know if you want to put that much pressure on this on a young guy like Anthony. So I think at least for one more year, you got to hold on to those three, and then Roman Anthony can be kind of like what Cora's doing now. Play him for matchups. You know, if you have Ref Snyder as well, I just feel more comfortable if those three remain the starting outfielders for next year.
I think I side with Joe on this one, just because I look at what happened this year and I look at what happened last year. This year, Willy Abreu did not have a path to at-bats at the start of the season. Today, he's getting everyday at-bats against right-handed pitching. Last year, Jarren Duran was in AAA to start the season. He didn't have a path to at-bats. But bang, by the end of the year, like, he's like your dude. He's your center fielder, your corner outfielder. Like, he's every day. And now he's one of the stars of the team. I don't think that it's – obviously, it's like a problem, quote-unquote, but it's a good problem to have if you have all of those guys on your roster and available. And then we watch this team all the time. How many times do we see these guys go down for extended periods of time? And it's like, damn, I'm glad we have that guy available. I think it would be good to have them all available for a year at least. See if Roman Anthony is that dude. He's another one of those guys that Cora is probably going to want to keep at bats, basically only righty-lefty matchups, at least to start. You can mix and match, sit on Rafael's flexibility to play the infield, to play the outfield, to do whatever, and, you know, get guys DH opportunities. Like, will you're probably still only playing against right-handed pitching, at least for the time being. Like, there's going to be avenues to get all of these guys at bats, just like Cora gets all the guys on the roster today at bats. So,
would you feel differently if Roman Anthony hits 350 with a low K rate and a really, really consistent defense in AAA? Would that make you feel differently?
No, but because it would be the same thing. Like, eventually, like, he will have his path to at-bats. You have your outfield, but if Duran goes down, bang, there's Roman's chance. If Willy Abreu goes down, bang, there's Roman's chance. If Sidon Rafael goes down, bang, there's Roman's chance. And not for nothing, if Trevor Story or Marcelo Meyer go down, bang, there's Roman's chance, because you just move Sidon to the infield. And then bang, there's an outfield spot open. So there's so many different avenues to get the guy a chance. It will happen.
And they also might want to do the service time thing that we spoke about earlier, which True. Would mean probably less of a chance. Yeah, I hear both sides. I think the reason there's going to be a big trade is because obviously there's a surplus, but they need an ace pitcher, and True. This free agent class is not super deep. So that's another part of why I think maybe they do move an outfielder. And shall I reveal who I think they're going to move?
That was going to be my next question, which was going to be, regardless of whether you think it should be this offseason, next offseason, or whenever, at some point, someone is going to have to go.
And I think the way you phrase that gives me an idea of who I think you're going to trade.
Yeah, people are going to hate this. Not that I don't want this guy on the Red Sox, but I just feel like he's probably the odd man out. I think it's going to be Jarren Duran.
Yep, I know. Because I knew you'd go that way.
What is Jarren Duran without blazing speed? Probably not stealing 30 bags, probably not leading the league in doubles and triples. I think he'll be at this level for a bit longer, but he's 28 next year. You can't keep that blazing speed for that long. It doesn't age well with most guys. You know, there's freaks like Ricky Henderson who are fast forever, but generally, especially the way Jarren Duran runs, he's 27 now. He's going to be 28 next year, like I said. He's still on his rookie deal, and he's on that deal. Well, he's ARB eligible, I should say, through 2028, his age 31 season. And he's very obviously coming off the best season of his career by a mile. So you'd be selling high. And this could be kind of that Connor Wong, Jarren Duran, welcome to Boston, Tarek Skubal. It's going to take more than that, but you know what? It's the framework. Something like that. I think that's going to be the eventual trade, whether it's before the season or at the deadline. I think it's going to be something like that where Jarren Duran is involved in a huge deal. This is not me saying I don't like Jarren Duran. I've said all year long he's been the best player on the team all season. Great defense, great offense, cool guy. But I just think, who ages well with that skill set? Which player has aged well? And by the way, this is not not to say whoever they trade with isn't going to think the same way. You'd have to find a team willing to take a risk like this, but I can't think of anyone who relies this much on speed that looks good into their 30s. It's so rare. So I hate to say it, but that's who I think it's going to be.
Joe, are you on that ship or are you picking someone else? We've agreed on too much.
I think for me, it would be between Duran and Abreu. I think Sedan is just too, he's too out of this world to throw out there. I mean, Sammy makes a really good point about the speed wearing down. I do disagree about, you know, his defense is getting better. It continues to get better every single year. Abreu's got a great arm out in right field. He's more of a streaky hitter, I would say, for me. This is tough. I think I'll probably say that if you want to get the most value for whatever deal you're going to make, whoever you deal with, I think Duran is probably your best bet. So I think I have to agree with Sammy that Duran is probably your best option if you are going to trade someone this offseason.
Well, it's interesting you phrase it like that, Joe, because to me, it definitely depends on when you're making the trade. Because if you're making it this offseason, it would be really hard for me to sell 4 years of Jaron Duran with the player that he is today, and not just the player that he is today, but the leader in that clubhouse that he is today. I would probably lean Willier and trade his 5 years over Duran's 4 years. But if you wait a year, which is what I think they should do, and Duran's got 3 years of control, that's a guy who, at that point, all the stuff that Sammy said about the speed as he gets into his late 20s and early 30s, yet he'd still be a superstar with tons of team control. So at that point, I mean, Duran for an ace is not some crazy trade. And Sam, you brought up Duran and Wong for Scooble. I actually don't
know. It'd
be
more than that, to be fair. It'd be like Duran, Wong, Campbell.
That's the question I was going to ask. Why though? Because Scooble has 2 years of control starting after the season. Duran has four. And Duran is a legitimate star.
I think it's what I said, though. It's a skill set that doesn't age well. Connor Wong is a good but flawed catcher.
But it's
and
4 years
neither
of
them are. Like, yeah, but neither. That's what I'm saying. Is it's 4 years of Duran with a skill set that we don't believe is going to age super gracefully because it almost never does.
But that doesn't matter because he's going to be under contract till what, his age 32 season? Like, I'm 31. Not expecting
that matters. 31. I think that matters. Like, I don't
think he's going to wear down then. I think he'll wear down his speed's going to wear down when he's like 33, 30. Like,
hopefully, but it depends. Like, what if whoever the trade partner is thinks maybe he's going to wear down sooner? He runs aggressive. It's not like Ellie De La Cruz where he's gliding out there. He's a Komodo dragon. He's angry when he runs. So, who knows? It's a big question. The problem I have, Gordo, with what you just said is you're not getting nearly as much for Willier Abreu, even with the extra control. Like, Jaron Duran's been a top 10 player in the league this year. Willier's been good, but not even in the same ballpark.
No, you're right.
Jaron Duran.
You wouldn't get close to the value. I agree with you there.
So many capable replacements. That's why I'm fine moving on from a guy like Durant. It would hurt badly. He's been great. He's been very nice to us on a personal level, and he's been an inspiration too. With the fuck 'em like that, his whole thing and the mental health awareness. He's great, and the city loves him. But these are the tough moves. This is like the Chris Sale trade. You trade the best prospect in baseball and your number two guy and two more guys who are in your top 20. This is that kind of tough trade that you bite the bullet and you do it. And then you win the World Series right after.
I'm not going to disagree with you. I'm not. Cause like, to me, I'm very like in a perfect world. Like I would say you trade Sedan because he's probably the least impactful player out of the four guys that are on the table, but he's the only right-handed hitter that you have there. And your entire infield is practically left-handed hitting. So you need Sedan in your lineup. And he's obviously getting better. He's put together great at-bats, whatever. But you need that right-handed bat. For me, it's between Willier and Duran. And to be honest with you, it just depends on when you do it. I honestly would be fine with either of them. It's going to be painful no matter what. Like, trading Willier would be painful. Trading Duran would be super painful. But there's obvious reasons to do either. Either way, they have to inject some pitching, some top-level pitching into this organization, whether it be this offseason via free agency or trade, or next offseason via trade, like
elite. Like they need happen. they need another Chris Sale trade. It's at that point where we've
and
waited.
A veteran.
We've waited what? Like 4 years. We've gotten to the point. You're at that point now. You're gonna be at that point in this offseason. So pay the fucking Piper already and get an ace. God, if they got Scooble for Duran and Wong and Campbell or something like that, that would be crazy.
I'm sorry, just real quick before we move on. Gordo, you said Sedan was the least impactful. Have you seen his defense?
Oh, it's terrific.
I think he's important for the pitching staff. We're talking about pitching. Don't you want the giant net out in center field to catch everything in Fenway?
Listen, I would love it, but Duran has also been like the statistical best defensive center fielder in baseball, not named Dalton Varsho. And I know that
yeah,
that's...
Do you see him laying out and
no, I know,
flying
he's terrific.
Like Superman?
This isn't me saying Sedan's not
left
good.
Fielder, by the way. He's the left fielder. He's a left
he's
fielder. Played,
he's done fun. Both. But
what a weird player.
This isn't me crapping on Sedan. This is me saying that Willier is one of the best hitters on the team and Jaren Duran's one of the best players in the league and Roman Anthony is one of the best prospects in the league. They're all great. But yeah, I'd take like if righty lefty
better
wasn't
fit.
A factor.
Better fit.
Sedan
Rafael's
is the
a better
fit.
Fit. Yes. And but he's already locked lefty, under contract.
That too. But if righty lefty wasn't a thing, I'd be taking the other three over him.
Really? Okay. But what if Sedan becomes and I could totally see this happening. If Sedan is the best or one of the best defensive center fielders in baseball, and he's a 2020 guy, I don't know if that's more or less valuable than Willier Abreu, who, by the way, has also played great defense. The bat has been better than Rafaela's. But if I'm getting that kind of production out of Sedan, I don't know, man. That defense, I just remember Jackie Bradley Jr. in center field and Coco Crisp in center field, Jacoby Ellsbury, how calming it is to know that there's just this wizard out there who anything that's hit in the neighborhood will be caught. So it's like the opposite of Kike.
Again, this isn't like me saying like I don't value, like obviously I totally value that, but you also have Willier Abreu with an 850 OPS as a rookie. Like, what the hell's that going to turn into?
No, this is like Mary fuck. This is like Mary fuck kill. Like, you have to say something bad about somebody, but you don't want to.
It's Manny that. Ortiz Nomar, who you killing?
Not killing anybody.
All right, we gotta put a bow on this one. But let's quickly. Some nuff said before we get on out of here. Anyone want to go first?
Yeah, I got a quick one. We not enough people. Okay, let me back up. The Astros, great team, whooped the Red Sox at Fenway this weekend. Congrats to them. They have their one legit ring. That's great. Houston, the highest obesity rate in the country. That's cool. Not enough people talk about how bad all of Houston's uniforms are. They're repulsive, repugnant, I might say. Orange and navy blue. Ugh. And the lettering is all like looks like hot dogs, and then the Space City shit. And this is a team that used to have sick uniforms. My favorite personal, I know everyone goes to the rainbow ones, which I thought were cool, but the navy blue with the gold star logo, the Astro, that was really cool. I like their early 2000s ones where they went to the World Series, like Brad Lidge and Lance Berkman. Then they come out with these like. Ugh, I just think they look terrible. So many Astros fans walking around Fenway this week. Good for them. They're wearing these repulsive jerseys. I just don't get it. I think they're some of the worst. Yeah, those are cool. See, those are clean. I like the pinstripes with the red. Yeah, look at Berkmania right there. Those are great. I just don't understand these new ideations. And I think people kind of let it slide because when we see these Astros uniforms, we think of winning because they've won a lot in these uniforms. Ugly, 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 and also ugly.
And also ugly.
Yeah, I don't really like the Astros uniforms, to be honest.
He does not like them.
No.
Joe, you got enough said?
I do, and I hate to sort of bring the mood down a little bit, or maybe not the mood down, but get a little bit more serious. But this week is going to be a really heartwarming week because it's obviously the Nesson WEEI Jimmy Fun radio telethon, and I got to work it last year. I'm going to be working it this year, not at the actual location, but I'll be a part of one of the shows on WEEI. And I got to tell you, it's if you weren't moved by some of the stories that you hear about struggling with cancer, all that kind of stuff, wait till you hear it out of the mouths of some of the patients with Dana-Farber, because it hits hard and in the most beautiful way possible. And I think everyone who's ever donated through the 20 plus years that this telethon's been going on, I think should absolutely be applauded. I think I saw a statistic somewhere that most of the donated money is not from these high institutions. It's just from people calling in and giving a dollar or $5 or whatever. So this is going to be a really impactful time during this series. And for all the listeners out there, if you're watching us, listening to us, it doesn't take that much to donate. You can donate a dollar because a dollar makes that much of a difference. So it's always a great time to when the Jimmy Fund comes around.
Joe, well said. From like a behind the scenes standpoint, how does it work? Because I know, I think I know how a telethon, right? That's the right word. I think I know how it works, but you worked, like you were working the phones last year?
Well, I wasn't picking up like one of the call. I wasn't the people like calling and getting donations. Like I was with WEEI and working one of their shows.
Okay. So like, I assume.
But the way it works line is there are about a dozen people who are there to answer phone lines. They'll take down your information, how much you want to donate. And that's pretty much it. Like they just take your information. They take however much you want to announce and they update the tote board every 30 minutes or so, I want to say. Last year, I think, got to 3.6 million.
Holy shit. Wow. That's
something around money. That. Something around that frame. So, yeah, like I said, these 36 hours doesn't take that much to donate. One little dollar makes a difference.
Joe, when does that run? When does that run from and to?
Is it? So it starts on Tuesday when the episode drops. I believe it starts at 6 a.m. and then it's going to end at the end of the Sox finale game with Texas.
Got it. So, yeah. So
around like 11 o'clock, I want to say. So you have from 6 a.m. on Tuesday to 11 p.m. on a Wednesday. And that's how much, that's your time frame. But go donate. Please go donate.
Yeah, every year, some of the stories that you hear, whether you're just like driving, listening to the radio or when you're listening to people during the actual games tell their stories, it's always so moving. And like, it's always so heartwarming to see how much people actually donate to this, because as you said, Joe, you're right. It's just everyday people calling in and donating what they can. So it's always every single year. It's just a nice, it's good perspective for people and it's a good cause and people do really good work with it.
Yeah, so really, it as I said, it's impactful, but in the most beautiful way possible.
Yeah. Well, on that note, remember to donate. But also, this has been episode 113 of Play Tessie. We appreciate you guys tuning in. Before you go, remember, hit that subscribe button wherever you're listening, all your podcast platforms. If you're on YouTube, you can check us out on the WEI page, the Play Tessie playlist. You can hit the thumbs up on those videos. And then, as always, go back to your podcast platform and subscribe. We're on the socials at Play Tessie on both Twitter and Instagram. We appreciate you guys tuning in for this one. Future is bright for the Red Sox. Big moves happening here down on the farm, and we will see the impact of these moves for years to come. And as always, there's going to be some tough decisions that need to be made as these guys force the Red Sox hand. We will every day, we are getting closer and closer to that next team and those decisions, and we will see what it comes out to look like. But till then, for Sammy, for Joe, this has been Gordo for Play Tessie episode 113. Thanks for tuning in. Peace.